was just a roundup or cattle.
There's a lot of things that need to be taken into consideration when we're partnering with our Indigenous community.
An estimated 6,000 people celebrated at the first ever public LGBT Pride event in Myanmar's capital city of Yangon.
It's just, it's beautiful. It feels so wholesome.
Welcome to Planet Pride,
Power and Paradoxes,
a special from This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Lucy Chappell. Around the world, there is no Pride season centered around the month of June anymore. An amazing variety of festivals, parades, marches, and even underground protests carry the name of Pride all over the globe throughout the year.
We'll take you down under for some highlights from Australia's world-famous Pride celebration, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. It's their 40th anniversary bash, headlined by the incomparable Cher.
But first, 2018 has certainly been a year of power and paradoxes for Pride events so far, as This Way Out has been reporting in NewsWrap, our weekly summary of the news in or affecting the worldwide LGBTQ communities.
February 2nd, one event went public, but one was aborted.
An estimated 6,000 people celebrated at the first ever public LGBT Pride event in Myanmar's capital city of Yangon. The Anne Proud Festival has been held for the past few years as a private event at the French Institute, and it's generally been limited to screenings of queer-themed films with an average total attendance of 2,000 to 3,000 people. This year's celebration, which more than doubled that number on its first day, got somewhat unexpected approval from the government to go public. Festivities, which were held over two consecutive weekends, kicked off on January 28th with live performances, drag queen races, and a handbag-throwing contest, film screenings, and what was called a human library. Perhaps the most popular part of the day because it allowed LGBTQ people to share their life experiences in a public but supportive setting. Queer communities in Myanmar exist in the shadows of a very traditional and conservative society. Activists say many remain isolated and deeply closeted because the media generally depicts sexual and gender variant people with only ridicule and disdain. Like many other former British colonies, such as India, Myanmar still maintains its very own Penal Code Section 377, which outlaws sexual acts against the order of nature. Flush with success, festival organizers say they're going to hold similar events in other parts of the country and begin a campaign to overturn Section 377.
But police dispersed an attempted pride gathering in the Tunisian capital of Tunis on January 27th. The Interior Ministry had banned the event for their own security and to preserve public order. The group behind the demonstration, the Association of Free Thinkers, said it was a rallying call to Sayabni, let me be, in Arabic. Officials claim to have received advance information that the event had been targeted for violence. A few activists tried to unfurl a rainbow flag anyway and scuffled with plainclothes officers before being bundled into a police van and spirited away. Baudid Bahadi, general manager of the LGBT web broadcaster Shamsrad, told Agence France-Presse that the police roughed him up in the process. He and several staff members have been frequent targets of death threats since the pioneering queer online radio station went live late last year. Tunisia's ironically named human rights minister, Samir Dalou, has condemned the country's only queer publication, Gay Day, saying that freedom of speech has its limits. Same-gender sex is a crime in Tunisia, punishable by up to 3 years in prison.
March 5th, we began the tale of the Pride denial versus the Doma slayer.
The queer legal eagle who slew Doma is now taking on the alderman of Starkville, Mississippi. City lawmakers last week voted 4-3 to deny a special event permit for the city's first ever LGBT Pride parade. Starkville Pride organizer Bailey McDaniel has recruited famed attorney and Mississippi native Roberta Kaplan to file suit against the city. Kaplan is best known as the lead attorney in the U.S. Supreme Court case that overturned key parts of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which had allowed the federal government to refuse to recognize the legal marriages of same-gender couples. That victory was a precursor to the High Court's ruling 2 years later that opened civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples across the country. Kaplan's motion for preliminary injunction of the Board of Aldermen's February 20th vote, filed in U.S. District Court on February 26th, calls for the application to be granted and for the city to provide in-kind services for a parade to be held on March 24th.
On March 12th, we reported,
the Board of Aldermen of Starkville, Mississippi, voted this week to approve a special event permit for the city's first-ever LGBT Pride Parade. The action reversed the widely reported 4-3 rejection of the permit last week. The March 7th reconsideration resulted in a 3-3 tie that Mayor Lynn Spruill broke with her vote in favor. She had strongly criticized the original rejection. One alderman abstained this time. Aside from the bad publicity the story has brought to the city of about 25,000 people, home to Mississippi State University, lawmakers no doubt succumbed to the looming lawsuit filed on behalf of the student-led Starkville Pride by famed lawyer Roberta Kaplan. Kaplan called the March 7th reversal a victory not only for our clients and for their equal dignity under the law, but also for the core principle that in this country we do not restrict a person's ability to speak based on whether or not we agree with what they have to say. The Pride Parade is scheduled for May 24th. Kaplan says she can't wait.
And on April 2nd, we reported,
the first ever Pride Parade was held in Starkville, Mississippi on March 24th. Mayor Lynn Spruill, a supporter of the Pride Parade, told the Associated Press that about 2,500 people marched peacefully, many with rainbow balloons, some on roller skates. Several walked with their dogs behind a sign that read, "Unleash Pride." A single protester picketed the event with a sign that called homosexuality an abomination. The Starkville Daily News proclaimed it the biggest parade in city history.
April 2nd, yes, even in the land of Pence.
It's Columbus, Indiana, the hometown of U.S. Vice President Mike Pence. The event is being organized by Erin Bailey as her high school senior project. She told the Huffington Post that just because Pence is known for his unabashed opposition to LGBTQ rights, that doesn't mean that all of us in his hometown are. We want to show our support as an all-inclusive community. The parade is planned for April 14th. A spokeswoman for Pence said that he is heartened to see young people from his hometown getting involved in the political process.
In a follow-up report on April 23rd, we found that Columbus, Indiana Pride had given Vice President Pence a well-deserved poke in the eye.
Organizer Erin Bailey called the larger-than-expected turnout of more than 2,000 people awesome. Many attendees who braved gloomy skies and threats of rain said it was a chance to send a message to Pence about diversity and inclusivity. Bailey had originally asked for a permit to close just one block for the Pride Festival. It wound up covering two blocks and featured 36 vendor booths, including representatives of area Unitarians, Disciples of Christ, and Presbyterians. The Presbyterians handed out rainbow-colored wristbands that said, "Love Abundantly." The vice president did not attend the festival, nor was he expected to. Coverage by the Indianapolis Star noted, however, that Pence impersonator Glenn Pennell of New York did. Wearing a dark suit jacket, button-down shirt and tie, and with neatly parted white hair and a plastic smile, Pennell may have resembled the vice president, but only from the waist up. Below the equator, Pennell wore tight-fitting short shorts and told reporters that they could call him Mike Hot Pence.
May 21st, in Beirut, Pride activists were not so lucky.
The organizer of an 8-day Pride festival, scheduled for May 12th through 20th in Beirut, was forced to cancel most of the events, including a commemoration of the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, after Lebanese authorities threatened to prosecute him for immorality. Hadi Damian was arrested at one of the kickoff events, an Arabic language reading of a theater text about homophobia, and held overnight in an overcrowded cell before agreeing, on the advice of his attorney, to sign a pledge to cancel all remaining Pride events. Prosecutors wanted to charge him with organizing events considered to be inciting immorality and disturbance of public morals.
May 28th, a milestone in the South Pacific.
Activists in Fiji used the May 17th International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia to stage the island nation's very first LGBTQ Pride March. It was also the first queer Pride event ever held in the South Pacific. Calling it a breakthrough to finally get a permit for the march, Rainbow Pride Foundation Executive Director Isikeli Vuluova told Gay Star News that they chose Fiji's second-largest city, Lautoka, after police denied their multiple requests to hold the march in the capital, Suva. Police in Lautoka even provided an escort for the estimated 50 marchers. Local media accounts described onlookers' reactions to the march as largely positive. That may signal a growing change in Fiji, even though the small island nation of about 900,000 people became only the second in the world in 2013 to protect the rights of LGBTQ people in its constitution. South Africa was the first in 1994. But deep-seated societal prejudices in both countries tend to express themselves in more violent forms outside of major cities. Vuluova noted that even in major metropolitan areas, LGBTQ people in Fiji are vulnerable almost anywhere, including at their respective homes and families, workplaces, and communities. And queer Fijians have no friend in Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama, who infamously said in 2016 that all LGBT people on the island should move to Iceland.
Remember, it only took 50 people to make a difference displaying their pride in Fiji. Whether you parade in power or march amid paradoxes, you can help create your own Planet Pride and make news almost anywhere. And we'll try to report it on This Way Out.
I'm Diddly Day, an actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
Planet Pride, Power and Paradoxes continues as we transport ourselves to Sydney, Australia. The Stonewall Rebellion was the start of the Pride Revolution. Sydney's world-famous gay and lesbian Mardi Gras began with a night of violence. Australian activists had been working since 1970 in groups like CAMP, the Campaign Against Moral Persecution, but that night in 1978 was the first time lesbians and gays fought back. Eyewitnesses to the melee vividly described their experiences in an award-winning 1999 documentary series produced by This Way Out Sydney correspondent Barry McKay. The series followed the Sydney Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence's Lesbian and Gay History Walk. Here's Mother Inferior at the city's famous King's Cross.
The cross is also the site of one of the most important events in the history of the struggle for gay liberation, the 1978 Mardi Gras. The police raid on the march took place along the Darlinghurst Road strip in the cross between here and the El Alamein Fountain. Here are a few of the original marches to tell the story of that evening. Lance Garland.
We thought that we should change the way the atmosphere at our demonstrations to make them more fun events, because obviously demonstrations in America were much more successful at attracting a wider section of the homosexual community than we were. Ron Austin, I think, suggested to a meeting at camp that we should have a Mardi Gras to celebrate Stonewall as well as the political marches.
I remember the night of the first Mardi Gras, meeting up with a friend in Oxford Street. We had decided that we would join in celebrations. We weren't in fancy dress, but dressed in our usual gear.
Lots of people were in fancy dress. In the advertising, we'd told people that it was fancy dress, because it was Mardi Gras. By the wall, picking out people, knocking them down, resisting arrest as they're kicked on the ground. I got a police permit from Central Police Station. Unfortunately, they never notified the Darlinghurst Police that we would be having the demonstration, so when we were all assembling in Taylor Square, the Darlinghurst Police came over. They were very upset that we were there and wanted to know what the bloody hell that we think we were doing. And when I showed them the permit, it made them even more angry. Even with that anger, the feeling of the crowd was quite excited, and it was a joyous night. Everybody was so happy, and to be out in the street and dancing down Oxford Street with music that we loved, it was just a fantastic night.
Read how disgusting we are in the press.
I marched with members of my household, and a lot of people were saying out of the bars onto the streets and getting people to join us. We had quite a lot of stunned onlookers, I might admit. It wasn't quite the scene you'd see there today by any stretch of the imagination.
Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy that way. Hey, sing if you're glad.
When
the Mardi Gras got going. It was a fabulous sort of momentum to the evening. The truck was there with the music. We were marching along with a range of other people that we knew. We got down to College Street, and that is where we began to realise that all was not entirely well.
This big policeman who was doing most of the harassing, he started to hammer on the window of the truck with his fist, and he was trying to break the window. At the same time, another police officer was around the back of the truck, and he got to the batteries that were supplying the power for the PA system, and he disconnected the batteries.
By the bottom of Oxford Street, we had maybe 1,000 or 1,500 people. But then the police wouldn't let us go into Hyde Park and grabbed the truck with Lance Garland and some other people and took it away. So we had no central way of informing the crowd what was happening. And people were really hyped up and had been together for a very short time, and there was a sort of real threat of anticlimax.
The march took off up towards the cross. There was a general cry of up to the cross, up to the cross, because there was fairly spirited resistance to police stopping gay marches in those days.
But as we went up William Street, it turned more into a demonstration. You know, we didn't have banners and stuff, but we started to chant things, you know, like 2, 4, 6, 8 gays just as good as straight, and stop police attacks on gays, women and blacks, and so on.
There was no music, but people were still excited and skipping along, and a young man ran past me, and he called out, "I'll never hide again," as he flew past me through the air as he jumped.
And then as we went to King's Cross, some people saw a whole lot of police cars going into King's Cross.
I do recall when we did get up to the cross and into Darlinghurst Road, marched down to LL Main Fountain, and then realised that the police were moving in on us and moving in en masse. And that was exceedingly freaky.
Once we got there, there was a very strange feeling in the air.
They were going to get us, and they were going to teach us a lesson and say that we would never come back on the streets again.
The police came in and blocked off the Coca-Cola sign entrance, and paddy wagons came in and then came up and actually trapped the marchers in the middle.
And then all hell broke loose. The violence erupted. People began getting arrested.
And the police were being very violent, grabbing people by the hair, twisting people's arms up their back.
Yeah, I mean, people were being sort of picked up bodily and thrown into paddy wagons.
When they put people into the vans, they just didn't gently push them in. They threw them in so that they hit the back of the van with their heads or their bodies. You could hear the banging.
The police grabbed me by both arms, and I was picked up, physically picked up, and then thrown toward the paddy wagon. I, by that stage, knew that I had sort of bruising, or felt that I was going to have massive bruising across my chest. The sleeve had actually been ripped right out of my leather jacket. And I mean, right out. There was not a single thread still attached to the shoulder of my jacket at all.
The women and some of the men started fighting back and releasing people that were being arrested. And of course, the violence was quite serious.
And it was just total and absolute mayhem. People were screaming, yelling, crying. There was every sort of emotion that you could possibly imagine.
It was like shooting fish in a barrel, basically. That was how it was.
It was just a roundup, like cattle. But the fight back continued, and when they'd open a van to throw someone in, sometimes five people would all jump out. And then the people who were standing around would grab the vans and try to tip them over. They were rocking them. It was a night like, if you were there, you'd never forget it for the rest of your life. It was quite amazing.
So yeah, I was pretty miserable by the time I got into the wagon, and I was actually terrified because I didn't know what was in store for us the rest of that night, what was going to happen, where we were going to be taken.
53 people were arrested, and the police retreated down to Darlinghurst Police Station with the people they got, and they were quite brutal to many of those people and kept people in, a lot of people in quite small cells, and were delaying releasing people. So people from the Mardi Gras then moved back down to Darlinghurst, and there was an all-night vigil to bail people out.
And I was in a cell with probably around 24 other women up at Darlinghurst Police Station, who were just herded in like animals. A few blankets were thrown in for warmth. The old Darlinghurst cells had virtually no heating. And there was a large bucket for us to drink from. And there was a lot of chatter, a lot of hugs, a lot of cuddles, a lot of reassuring, and also a lot of discussion about what was going to happen to us.
And we stood outside, hundreds of us, chanting out, "Let them go, let them go." Later on, of course, we heard that people who were inside, who were scared and being intimidated by the police, some were being bashed in the cells, could hear us outside chanting out, and that gave them a lot of support. They knew that, you know, they just weren't abandoned in the cells.
And it was that chanting and knowing that people were out there in support of us that I suppose offered some sense of reassurance that we were going to be rescued, or something was going to happen that wasn't going to keep us in those cells forever.
And a lot of the drag queens like Trixie, who knew what was happening in the Oxford Street and King's Cross venues, started raising quite a lot of money, and people rang their friends and everyone got their rent money, and cash started arriving there to bail out the 53 that were arrested. They wouldn't let lawyers or doctors in, and we knew that people were being beaten up badly inside or were badly injured.
And it was an amazing night to see all of this money that seemed to come. The people went around the bars collecting money, and everywhere it just came in, and everybody was bailed that night.
I was so relieved to actually get out of those, out of the police cell at Central, and several of my friends were down there waiting for me. Also, I do recall sort of people actually saying, "Was I hurt or had I been hurt?" And one woman, Wendy, sort of taking photographs of the bruising, which had already begun to come out.
I mean, really, people's names got published in the papers, people were sacked, people suicided, a whole lot of things like that, or at least one that I know of did.
It was the birth of our modern gay and lesbian rights movement in Australia, and I think it's great that it's grown like it has into this wonderful event, but I think it's really important that we understand that the reason why we have this Mardi Gras and this freedom today was because of that struggle that we took part in. Had we not fought back, had we sort of allowed the police to intimidate us and gone back into our closets, there'd be no Mardi Gras now, and we'd be just as bad off as we were back then.
Hi, this is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out. Support your local public radio station. You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia. I spoke to one of the 78ers, Betty Hounslow, at the Mardi Gras press conference last week.
Well, you must remember that 78ers are people who were involved in the march on the night of the 24th of June 1978, as well as people who were involved in the demonstrations afterwards, because it didn't finish then. So I wasn't there on the night at King's Cross when the police rioted and attacked us, but I was there just after that when we went to the police station where people had been held. And I was involved in the protests that came afterwards and was arrested in one of those protests. But that night, everybody knows about in the gay community who of a certain age in Australia. It was a frightening night when the police absolutely rioted and were brutal in their attacks on people.
Looking back over the last 40 years, what changes have you seen in the Mardi Gras?
I think that the original Mardi Gras were very political. We were still fighting big battles in terms of decriminalisation of male homosexuality, in terms of the Police Summary Offences Act, which was used to pick up people for nothing and throw them in the lockhouse. There was a political edge to the Mardi Gras, which I think was lost at certain points. I think it has come back now. I think that there's been a bit of a turning of the circle. And so the Mardi Gras now is a wonderful parade, a wonderful spectacle, but it also makes some hard-hitting political points. And I think that I'm pleased that it's called this year a parade of love and protest.
And of course we've had marriage equality in the last year here in Australia, I guess, which is a big political win for the LGBT community.
It is a big political win, and it's wonderful that those who want to get married now can get married. And at the same time we want to make sure that those who want to live a different type of lifestyle are not marginalised in our community. We don't want to get back to a situation where there were good gays and bad gays, which there was in the past, and it would be a pity now if only those in monogamous committed marriage relationships were seen as being acceptable gays and lesbians, because our community is very, very diverse, and that's our strength, and we want to keep it.
The New South Wales Police Force has radically changed its attitude towards the LGBTIQ community since 1978, and they now have over 200 gay and lesbian liaison officers in New South Wales.
So I'm Assistant Commissioner Tony Crandell. I'm the New South Wales Police Force Corporate Spokesperson for Sexuality, Gender Diversity and Intersex. This year I'm also the Commander of the Police Response to Mardi Gras 2018, and our police will be on a safety mission to make sure that people are safe and that the footprint is secure for a very successful Mardi Gras event. We acknowledge that it is the 40th year of since the start of Mardi Gras, and that the 78ers were heavily involved in that particular celebration, which was termed as a protest. But it's important to understand the history, and it's important to understand where the police have gone wrong in the past. There was an apology that I issued on behalf of the New South Wales Police Force on the 4th of March 2016, and we reiterate that position today to the 78ers. We understand that we didn't get things right, and we apologise for the pain and hurt that we caused the 78ers back then. The positive part is that police have participated in the Mardi Gras parade for the last 22 years. We've marched for the last 20 of those years. And we are in a very, very good place in terms of our relationship with the LGBTI community, as well as our partners, the AIDS Council of New South Wales, City of Sydney, all of the people that put Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras together, including the organising committee. We have a fantastic relationship with them. We value that relationship. We have a memorandum of understanding that outlines our cooperation in that respect, and it certainly paid dividends in relation to the way that we police the parade. And the things that we achieve together as a team. I think that that our participation in the parade is so important. It bridges a lot of gaps. It makes sure that we never return to a position that we were in 1978. We make sure that we work with the community, that we're there for the safety of the community, and that we're not there to use tactics that are inappropriate or that cause any pain, hurt, or otherwise interfere with the comfort of people that are actually at an event to celebrate and have a good time.
Thank you to the original 78ers, Lance Garland, Sandy Banks, Diane Minnis and Sister Mary Third Secret of Fatima for sharing with us what it was like that night.
The Australian activists never looked back. Mardi Gras began to grow. In 1980, the first group to march under the banner Black Gays took to the streets. Now there is Koori Gras. Koori is an Australian English word for Aboriginal people from the southeast of the country. This Way Out Sydney correspondent Barry McKay was there among the artists and attendees.
Aboriginal drag queen Nana Miss Koori will be hosting the event this year.
Being Nana Miss Koori, it's about expressing myself. I love being on stage and, presenting myself as a drag queen. It gives me the ability to actually be myself, to express myself. You know, I'm still myself, but up until that wig goes on, I get into a professional persona, which is so much fun. Yeah, it's not going to stop here. I'll be going for quite some time yet.
What is unique about being an Aboriginal drag queen?
My costumes. I like to identify my costumes through my culture and also with my look, my appearance, my makeup, and just the way that I carry myself on stage.
You have a lot of non-Indigenous people that come along to the Koori Grah.
Amazing following. A lot of mainstream, there is a lot of non-Indigenous that does support, that come to our events. And which is beautiful because it's for everybody. You know, when you're talking about equality, equality is for everyone.
So you're striving really to bring reconciliation?
Pretty much that, yeah. That, that we can all walk the same path together on our journey, on our spiritual journey.
LGBTI, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander folk getting organised, showing culture and really coming out of the closet and being supported by white allies. So it's really good. I mean, the thing is that Aboriginal folk are suffering higher and higher imprisonment rates. They're suffering land grabs by state and federal governments who support the state governments, and also massive child removal. So, and this of course affects the LGBTI community within the Aboriginal crew, but so these are some of the issues as well, though, coming out of the closet, facing racism and homophobia. We've got to show a lot of support for our Aboriginal friends here.
I'm definitely having an awesome night here tonight. I'm a Sydney resident. I live out in Western Sydney, so it's definitely awesome coming into the city for Koori Grah.
How is this special to other Mardi Gras events you've been to?
Well, it's awesome because I don't feel like there's much black representation in Mardi Gras, so it's amazing to have an event like this go on during the week. This was set up as a space for black fellas coming into Sydney for Mardi Gras this week. It was set up as a communal space so we can just chill out, hang out. Each night they've had awesome events going on. Tonight's Black Nulla, and there's been an awesome array of black drag queens coming on. I feel very inspired. I'm an artist, and I feel like I'm just getting out and hanging with my people. So Mardi Gras is like Christmas to me, so yeah.
Look, it was a huge success. It was so great to be amongst the community here in Redfern, and just to be amongst all of our LGBTIQ community, and particularly the brother boys and sister girls, it's so great that we can have a safe space like this to come and celebrate. And I think it's really important that this happens before the Mardi Gras parade, so we actually have a special event before it all happens.
I'm a Mungbat woman. I'm from Wadiyakorn, the great northern lands of Broome. I'm a weirdo Yandu, a strong magic woman. It's all in what you want to do. This song is called Kojara. This is about us growing up now, coming together, good to see your family. Haven't seen you for a while. Rise to lightning spirit. Get up, stand up. Let's get on with it. One circle. Kojara, kojara, inja kojara, ya I kojara, kojara.
The beautiful voice of Kerri-Ann Cox, an Indigenous singer who sang at the opening of last year's Bumali Gallery LGBTIQ Indigenous Art Exhibition. The gallery in Sydney's Leichhardt will be staging another Indigenous LGBTIQ art exhibition this year. I spoke to the curator of the gallery, Kyra Kum Singh.
This year we've called our exhibition Luscious All Sorts. The theme is Love One. It's around the 2017 equality, marriage equality stuff, and we decided to do our own little spin on it, and I thought it'd be great for all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists around to do art pieces around love and all that sort of stuff. So I think it was really timing for that decision to come through last year, and I think for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we've never really been equal in this country. However, one step at a time, and we'll slowly get there, I guess. So
here I am with the Dreamtime Divas. We've just performed at Bumali Aboriginal Art Gallery in Leichhardt in Sydney. Thank you very much to both of you. First of all, I'd like you to get you to introduce yourselves.
Hi everybody, I'm Lacey Dunhamet, and
I'm Nova Jaina.
Beautiful. Can you tell me a little bit about Lacey Dunhaman? Because people overseas may not know what the reference there is.
I'm a bit of an ode to a local sister who's a bit of a singer-songwriter celebrity here back at home, and her name's Casey Donovan. And, you know, I just had a little bit of a cheek. She's my inspiration, and I've come up with Lacey Dunhaman, or two, or three, you know. Yeah.
So could you tell me a bit about your backgrounds? What was it like growing up gay and Indigenous?
Very difficult. Difficult in the sense of having expectations from, you know, particularly my mum wanting more grandchildren, even though she had like 26, 27 of them, knowing very well that I was a gay boy back then when I came out to her when I was a 13, 14-year-old boy. Mm. You know, not being accepted by my peers as such, you know, being asked to play a game of football or do all the blokey, manly boy things. So, you know, I kind of dealt with that at a very late stage in life. I didn't really come to terms and comfortable with myself till I was about 35. I'm now a 42-year-old man, you know, drag queen. But, yeah, I have coped with all the ups and downs of... Oh, just the ignorance of people.
It was a little bit different for me. It wasn't only the Aboriginal side of it. It was also my family was very religious. That whole, you know, stereotypical thing that homosexuals are pedophiles and predators and all that kind of stuff. So that was really hard. That was serious. And burly brothers and things like that. So, you know, went through a lot. But come out the other side, fierce and fabulous.
What is the Dreamtime Divas story?
It really started as a bit of fun for a local gig that we were asked to do, and we were dabbling in drag, and they thought, oh, you know, let's frock up and have a bit of fun. It was for International Women's Week, so we put on a cabaret show, and it went crazy, you know. We sold out 300 tickets, and
where
just
was that?
That was in Kempsey at our
just
local
a
RSL.
Small town.
Yes,
small country town, population of about maybe 26,000 people.
Yeah.
Like family and friends and, you know, wider community, just... Yeah. The whole community supported us.
And then everywhere we went after that, it was like, oh, that was fabulous. When's your next show? When's your next show? So it was kind of, okay, let's put on another show. You know, let's have fun. And it developed from there. We created the Dreamtime Divas. And you know, and then we started to get recognition and a little bit of a platform. And so we wanted to bring our past into it and try and create change and bring on some of the importance of, you know, youth suicide, teen, you know, depression and all that that comes along with homophobia, and especially in rural communities in Australia.
Particularly amongst LGBTQI kids, you know, who are finding it difficult to come to terms with themselves and
who,
you know,
they are.
In who they are and just the acceptance and all that, what, you know, we all need.
You were doing support work with LGBT Indigenous youth in the Kempsey area. Can you tell us a bit about the Dreamtime Divas mission statement, if you like?
More or less, we want to raise awareness for youth depression and teen suicide. You know, for homophobia to affect our young people so much that they're taking their own lives, that's something we've got to help with. You know, we have a platform, let's do something with it, and that's what we're about.
As well as raising the awareness of our LGBTQI kids, you know, committing suicide, you know, at such a rate that it's just ridiculous.
It's huge. The statistics in Australia are overwhelming.
Children who are going through mental health issues, you know, they just need to be recognised and hopefully addressed.
And our main audience, what we've found, and that's the difference between us and a lot of the other queens, is our main audience is mainstream community. You know, we don't have gay paths where we're from or gay clubs and things like that. So our audience is mainstream community, heterosexual, married couples, elders, everything. So without that direct message, it's more of being us, being fabulous, these people loving us and accepting us for us, and these younger generations seeing us be accepted and make them feel, oh, it's okay. You know, if they can frock up and go to that extreme, it's not so hard to just come out.
And Nova, you had an example in your own family of someone who took their own life.
About a year ago now, it was his anniversary, my 19-year-old nephew at the time, he'd committed suicide, and so his name was Baylon Hoskins, and his parents approached us, the Dreamtime Divas, and asking for this year's Mardi Gras, you know, 2018 Mardi Gras, if we could lead a Baylon's gift.
They've created a foundation in his honour, and they're rolling out programs across all our local schools, primary schools, and targeting these issues. Hey, you know, sexual diversity, gender diversity, and all that.
So they've tapped into Headspace and Beyond Blue, so they're quite renowned Australian, I don't know, probably international organisations where they're dealing with mental health issues and, you know, concerns that concern our kids, basically. But there are quite a few gifts around Australia. The parents of the children, they've created gifts as well, so there's quite
all
a few that
together.
They're all collaborated. And so, you know, with pride, we've been asked this year to lead Baylon's gifts, which is what we're all about. And you know, if we can hopefully help get that message out, as Lacey mentioned, if it takes us getting dressed up in a frock, you know, 4.5 hours to do it, then so be it, you know, because we have fun and we have quite a following here in Australia. We, you know, it's really quite an experience.
Nova, you took part in the recent Miss First Nations contest in Darwin. What is the contest and how did it go?
The Miss First Nations contest was our first ever all Indigenous drag queen competition. So there were six of us. It was quite similar to RuPaul's Drag Race, where we were asked to go through and do particular looks and photo shoots. You know, a couple of the queens got into cages with crocodiles, you know, with just this perspex and boxes in front of them, like, no, you're the crazy girls, you can have that, you can win that, all for it. But it was just all about showcasing our, you know, unique, I think, Indigenous drag queen personas, and just putting ourselves out there, because whether a lot of you guys know, if you walk into any particular gay bar in any Australian cities, there's not a great many representatives of Aboriginal Indigenous drag queens here in Australia. So, you know, hoping that this can...
It was a huge platform for all us sisters. You know, we started a few years ago and there was one sister that we knew, and now there's plenty, and we're all in together and we have a huge sisterhood and we've got each other's back, and
we're going
for it. And we wanted to open no doors for those young queens and the next generation under us, Aboriginal queens who only ever see white queens on stage or in cinema or on theatre, you know. The doors are open now, sisters, go for it, go hard or go home. Hi, I'm Lacey Dunaman.
And I'm Nova Jaina.
And we are the Dreamtime Divas. And you're listening to
This Way Out,
the weekly global community radio show produced by,
for and about the world's diverse sexual and gender variant minorities.
And those who love them.
Australia! Thank you so much for having us, Mughalin and Mardi Gras. Happy 40th anniversary, which is friggin' awesome. I'm so happy to be here to share with you some of my original music.
Canada. I've traveled here to celebrate 40th Mardi Gras celebrations here for Pride, and I am so thankful to be here to share my music and to share who I am and where I come from. And I just wanted to thank Sydney Pride and Mardi Gras and also Mughalin Theatre Festivals for having us here. We are their first international artists, which is amazing, and I'm so ready to represent and really get to know the individuals here in Sydney and Australia, because they've been awesome so far. So I'm really excited to make these connections with the Black youth as well. We're doing a workshop with them throughout the week.
Whereabouts in Canada are you from exactly?
It's like Ontario, Southern Ontario. Yeah, that's where the Six Nation lies. Yeah. It's a reserve. Reservation is more U.S. language. Okay. Yeah, but reserve is more what we have. Yeah, it's 6 miles. It's supposed to be on, like, we made treaties and stuff like that, but I don't want to get into that because they're all broken over there in Canada, so I don't really want to get into that stuff because I come here and, you know, I see the Black flag up, which is amazing. You guys are one step ahead of us for sure. So there's a lot of things that need to be taken into consideration when we're partnering with our Indigenous community. And that's one of the things that I'm looking forward to is uniting internationally. So now that, you know, I'm out here, we're doing our thing, we're making our connections. We want to just promote that love and togetherness. And that's pretty much my albums. Volume 1 and Volume 2 is 528. That's a frequency and vibration of love. So that's what I try to vibrate on whenever I'm in public, whenever I see family, friends, fans. That's what I want to promote.
Can you tell me a little bit about what life is like for Indigenous LGBTIQ Canadians?
For us, it's a struggle. On top of being just Indigenous, we have, you know, gay on top of that, you know what I mean? So it's like double trouble for some people, and that's why we got to stick together, and that's why we have to acknowledge each other and you know, be that good person to make those connections and stick up for people, you know what I mean? If something's not right, you know, say something. That's one thing that I know I've done in the past when it's coming down to like bullying and stuff like that. We need to stick together. Everybody's different. Everybody's unique. But one thing I know for sure, we all have gifts that we have for the world. And that's my whole journey, is helping other people and helping myself, knowing my gifts and using them in the most frequency of love you can never get.
What about racism in Canada against LGBTIQ Indigenous people? Do you find that within the wider LGBTIQ community in Canada there is quite a bit of racism?
Racism against Indigenous people in Canada is really lit. It's high right now. It's ridiculous right now. There's so many things. The justice system is so unfair. There's a lot of cases that, you know, white folks are getting off of murdering Indigenous people, and that's crazy to me. Where's the justice? You know, they got an all-white jury. They got an all-white judge. Everything's all white. It's got to change. And it's got to change fast, because I know that our people are getting really sick and tired of, like, the bullshit. That's right, and that's what it is. It's race. It's total racism. It's so clear. And this is 2018. You know what I mean? You got your land. You're on your land. Let's grow some respect here and follow those treaties that we made together. It's a togetherness here. But yeah, when it comes to Canada, I'm proud to be Indigenous. I'm proud to be from Canada. I'm specifically proud to be from Six Nations. That's who I'm proud of. I don't consider myself a Canadian citizen. I'm an Indigenous person. I'm a First Nations person of Canada. That means I don't follow their rules. I follow my reserve's rules. I follow that respect. I follow the natural, ancestral teachings. You know what I mean? So, and that's got to do with love. And passion, compassion, you know, like those are things that Canada really needs to take some notes on. Oh, oh, oh.
At last, the night of the big party arrived.
Special guest at the party this year, Cher, was watching the parade with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. Cher spoke to SBS Television Australia's Joel Creasy during their broadcast of the event.
Cher, welcome to Mardi Gras 2018, the 40th anniversary. Can I just say I'm freaking out a little to meet you?
Thank you.
You look absolutely fantastic. How's the night been? The crowd have just gone off for you.
It's fabulous. I actually want to just kind of, I've been here watching the parade for a little while. So it's beautiful. Everyone's having such a wonderful time. Feels so wholesome.
Absolutely. Do most people freak out like this when they meet you? Are they like shaking like I am right now?
It depends, sometimes.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, she's touching me.
It always makes me curious, but...
Well, you're so fabulous and you've been such a supporter of our community. What do your LGBTQI fans mean to you?
Well, you know, I've known gay people since I was 9 years old.
Yes.
And I also have seen, you know, I know about Stonewall. I've seen firsthand what people have had to go through, and I'm so happy that finally everyone is not having to take their life in their hand to be who they are.
Yes. I love your Twitter. I also love it when you troll Donald Trump. Thank you so much for that. If you can keep that up.
Yes, I will forever and ever until he's gone.
Oh, yes. We've heard it from Cher. And Cher, of course, last year Australia got marriage equality. We would like to introduce you to one of the pioneers of the marriage equality debate, Magda Szubanski.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Wonderful to meet you. Thank you for all that you've done for our community. How important do you think it is actually for people with a platform, for people with celebrity, to actually make a political stand at this time in the world's history?
The thing I think is that just because you're famous or because you've done something that gives you some notoriety, it doesn't mean that you've given up your citizenship. So I see him as maybe the most dangerous person in my country, so I can't not voice my dismay and my fear and my anger, and I mean, he's ruining my country.
It's a little bit sad.
And you're making ours better, though, by being here. Oh, Cher, thank you. Just made my night.
Thank you. So important. Thank you.
Cher, thank you so much. It's an honour.
For This Way Out, this is Barry Mackay wishing you a happy Mardi Gras from Sydney, Australia.
The Mardi Gras parade crowds were indeed well-behaved. Only 5 arrests were reported, most for alcohol-fueled disorderly conduct. Barry's report also mentioned that Cher was watching the parade with Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull. But there was more going on behind the scenes. The Twitterverse exploded when Turnbull posted a selfie with Cher along with his Mardi Gras greetings. fans were quick to fill in the foreign pop dignitary on the PM's role in forcing the marriage equality plebiscite that had allowed for so much anti-queer hate mongering. They also pointed to his stance against refugees, as well as his complicity in potential new attacks on queer rights. Cher issued an apology the following day, tweeting, "I am so sorry. Guess that's why I have few friends who are politicians." She was generally forgiven for not being up on Australian politics. Before we go, there's one more moment of 2018 Pride we'd like to share. Here's West Hollywood Mayor Pro Tempore John Duran.
I'm here tonight to make a presentation to Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle from This Way Out. This Way Out is the longest running LGBT radio program that's been in operation for 30 years on KPFK. They've won numerous awards. They've been broadcasting here in Los Angeles, Pacifica Radio Station, as I said, for 30 years, and they're distributed internationally to 200 local community public radio stations all around the world, throughout Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, Pacifica, Costa Rica, Australia, and so LGBTQ people all over the world rely on this programming, I think, for nourishment and to be kept abreast about what's happening in the movement. And I know I've been a guest on the show a couple of times over the decades, but it's really a great pleasure to present this and to congratulate Greg and Lucia on 30 years of extraordinary work that people all over the world are very grateful for. So thank you to This Way Out.
We want to thank you so very, very much for this honor. You know, when we began our radio show, there were people even in community radio stations who couldn't figure out what we could possibly talk about for a half an hour a week, every week. What could you possibly say about being LGBT for that much time? Well, for 30 years, we found plenty to say. And there's been plenty of incredible things that we never would have dreamed could have happened. And if we've been a little bit of a part of that, if we've been part of inspiring or educating or just giving people some hope, then we can be very proud. Thank you very so much.
Thanks for listening to Planet Pride, Power and Paradoxes, a special presentation from This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
Our news wrap anchors were Michael LeBeau, Jessica Andrea, John Dyer V, Sarah Sweeney, Wenzel Jones, and Michelle Yater. Our Sydney, Australia correspondent is Barry McKay. Special thanks to Rita Gonzalez and to KPFK program director Alan Minsky.
Cher performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music.
This Way Out's funders include the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and our individual listener donors.
You can keep up with our regular weekly half-hour shows at thiswayout.org.
From all of us at This Way Out to all of you living in or trying to get to Planet Pride,
stay powerful
and be proud.